Yeah, you guys saw the movie Animal House with Kevin Bacon in the prone position. Thank you, sir. May I have another? It's a lot like, yeah, it's a lot like that. And I'm kind of hopeful, but I've been around long enough to be a little bit of a skeptic. I'm hopeful that with this next wave of technology, basically machine learning, artificial intelligence, that maybe, just maybe, there'll be some employers out there who will say, this is fantastic because it's going to free up our recruiters to recruit. And we're going to use this to enable them to have actual real dialogue with the candidates who seem at a surface to be a good fit. And we're going to use skill-based hiring methods and actually look at, is this person likely to be more productive, not based upon some name on a diploma? Or, where they, what zip code they live in, or just really arbitrary ways that at the end of the day, they're kind of designed to eliminate candidates from the hiring pool rather than include them.
What is going on, everybody? Ryan Leary here with Work Defined. And I'm here with Mr. William Tincup, and you are listening to the Use Case Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, someone that we haven't seen in, what do we say it was? 15 years, 20
Steve
years?
And I have seen each other
like
since 2017.
And it's not because I've been doing time. It's there's a...
Accused, never convicted.
No. That you were never convicted. Yes, you were never convicted. So, but Steven, man, how are you? How is everything? We haven't seen you in such a
I'm
long
doing
time.
great. I live in Minnesota, so we love this time of the year because people are actually able to go outside safely.
That's right.
Yeah, it's not minus 24. So I'll tell you what, before we kick off for the audience, why don't you introduce yourself and tell everyone a little bit about you and College Recruiter, and we'll
Sure,
kick this
no
thing off.
sweat. Thanks for having me, Ryan and William. Great to be with you. I am the founder of College Recruiter. It's a job search site for students and recent graduates of colleges and universities. Global, we help more than 13 million students and recent grads a year find great new careers. I am married. Well, we were just talking in the green room. I think I have you both beat. I'm coming up on 33 years.
Yep.
Three adult kids and a hyper bonded dog.
And your wife works with you. Faith works with you, correct?
Yeah. So my wife Faith is our CEO.
Yep.
You know how we all rise to our own levels of incompetency? So I realized a long time ago. I'm talking about me, not her.
This is
public, so good. I wouldn't do that.
We just
talked about this. You're not supposed right. to talk this
I could, but I can talk that way about myself.
Yes.
I
mean,
yes, everybody else does. Why not join in? So I realized a long time ago that I am really bad at managing people and I hate it. And so one of the nice things about the way our company has evolved over the years is that nobody reports to me. They're all happier about that, and so am I.
How do you work with your wife all the time? First of all, I think it's fantastic. I don't know if my wife and I could do that.
Yeah. So the only real problem that we've ever had working together is early on when we were literally in the same office, in the same home office.
Right.
And so if she was on a call or I was on a call, it was just really, really distracting. But fortunately, our home setup is, so she's at the far end of she's at one far end, I'm at another. I can't hear her, she can't hear me. But it is really unusual for a husband and wife to own a small business, be working remotely all the time,
right.
traveling, raise kids, all that kind of stuff. And still not want to scratch out each other's eyes. We are unusual. I don't recommend it to most people because I think that usually most marriages just aren't going to, it's not going right. to work for most marriages. It does for ours. It's great for ours. But I think we're outliers.
Nice. Well, so why don't you kick us off and give us the story? Why
yeah.
College Recruiter?
Just thinking the same thing.
Where did this thing come from?
It came from a trip when I was about 19, 20 years old. I was traveling with my parents. I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada. My dad was doing a lot of business in Phoenix. We went down to Phoenix one year at Christmas time and just, you know, he could get some business done. We could get out of the cold weather. And I just went over to Arizona State University's campus in Tempe, picked up a copy of a campus map that they published, and brought it back to a friend of mine that I was in an undergraduate business program with, because he had a small business that was printing coupon books, calendars, stuff like that. And he would sell advertising to local retailers, restaurants, whatever. The reason I brought the map back was because ASU's campus map had advertising around the borders, you know, for your local Subway, Burger King, apartment rental, whatever. And I thought it was a really good idea and that he might want to add it to his product mix. He thought it was the stupidest idea in the world. And so I said, well, you know, would you mind if I did it? Because if I do it, I'm going to be competing against you for ad dollars. And smart guy, nice guy, but at times arrogant. And so he said, knock yourself out. And I think he was really thinking it would fail miserably. In fact, I know he was thinking it would fail miserably, and it didn't. So it was great. In a couple of months, I made at least three times what most of my friends were making, you know, as waiters or working in retail shops, had way more fun. And then I handed over that micro business to a couple of friends of mine, because I was moving to Minneapolis to go to grad school. Went to the University of Minnesota, graduated, and I was out working in my first job after graduation. And the you could call it the siren song of running a small business came back, and I kind of got back into it. So that was way back in 91, 92. I think that Eisenhower was president still. Got the business started. It was publishing a campus map of a few different schools, or a few different campus maps. And I could start to see that what the business really was not a cartography business. Like, the expertise was not in publishing maps. The expertise wasn't even in selling advertising to local businesses. What it really was a little bit more nuanced than that. It was helping businesses reach that college and university student audience. And so what other things do those users need? Do students and recent grads? Yes, they need to know where the local restaurant is and the local apartments, but they also need to know where they can find a job.
Right.
So I created an employment magazine in 1994, slightly before the internet came along. It was called College Recruiter. And then in 1996, we added what we thought was going to be the sizzle that would help sell the steak, the website that became collegerecruiter.com. The first version of the website, and I think we're all old enough to unfortunately remember some of this technology, but ColdFusion was built on. One of the really great things about ColdFusion, and I say this sarcastically, the early versions, was when you got to about 200 users, users, it crashed.
Right.
So we were having to literally reboot the server, which was a box in my office, a few times a day, because we would like hit 200 people. And it was kind of like a good thing. But man, I remember those early days, very few employers had email.
Right.
And one of the jobs that we had to create for the website part of the business was that if a student saw the employment ad on the website, we had like a contact us form kind of underneath it, because there wasn't a way for that student to email their resume to the employer. And very few employers had websites at all. So we couldn't send them to an ATS or anything like that. So a student would fill in the form, name, email, phone number, you know, copy and paste your resume here. I had a guy who would come in at like 7 a.m. and was usually there for a few hours, printing off all of the resumes that came in overnight, and then faxing them one by one.
I was just going to say, I was just going to say,
yeah,
don't tell
so
me.
Hundreds of outgoing faxes, completely manual each day. So then I discovered this service called Juno, which was a free email service, and they would mail you a disk. And I'm talking like 5 1/4 inch, you know, floppy disk.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we would then send those out to our customers and say to them, if you install this, we can have the emails, the resumes emailed to you. And so we had, you know, like Holiday Inn Express 428 at juno.com or whatever. And we were then emailing. So then it, pretty quickly, we didn't need that part-time person to be working as many hours. So it was a different era, very much the Wild West.
So I kind of feel like you're saying you were the first part of automation that got rid of this.
You were AI.
That's basically what I heard.
So, I mean, the nice thing is that that guy is now holds the mortgage on your home, Ryan. So, you know, you just have to be nice. I have no idea.
He's very nice.
Good guy. But I have a sneaking suspicion that he went on to things that were of more interest to him than printing and faxing resumes.
Fair enough. I think that's fair. So through the process, let's fast forward into more or less today.
Sure.
You're focused on early stage and those that are coming out of college. So some maybe not coming out of college, but that early stage, which sometimes people confuse as hourly or high volume. Maybe they use them as synonyms, etc. What's going on in that market right now? What are you seeing with your audience?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of more balanced than it has been for a long time. We certainly have gone through these periods where if you're early in your career, like you say, you've graduated from, could be a 2-year school, 4-year school, grad school, whatever, college, university, or maybe you just didn't go, or maybe you dropped out, or maybe you went through the military, or maybe you're 53 years old and you've decided that you want to do something different with your life.
Right.
That part of the market is
very
off
age, by the way. Very specific.
Yeah, and I'm 57, so I don't know who the 53 year old is, but whatever. Somebody who's listening right now thinks I'm talking about them, and I am, and I love you, sir. But anyway, that person who's early in their career, that whole cohort has very often been the canary in the coal mine.
Right.
If the labor market is heating up, they tend to feel it first. If the labor market is cooling off, they tend to feel that first.
Right
now, it's kind of lukewarm. Not an unhealthy place for it to be. If you're on the employee side, you would certainly prefer for it to be a little hotter. Wages would go up. You'd have more choice. But it's been a lot worse. And it wasn't all that long ago, you know, 2020, 2021, when it was a lot worse than it was now. I would not have wanted to be graduating in 2020. That's for sure. On the employer side, there aren't that many roles in that cohort, you know, looking for people early in their careers, that if you're doing things reasonably well, you should be able to fill all of your slots with reasonably well-qualified candidates. Are you going to have your pick of the litter? No.
Right.
But are you going to be able to call higher qualified people who maybe with a little bit of learning and development can become really, really good employees? You should be able to.
So take us through the process here. So what companies, what type of company should be looking at you? Are you selling to the enterprise? Is that SMB?
A great question.
Take us through what that looks like.
Something that's actually I've tripped over before. It's like, do you work with career management centers and work on the back end?
It's mostly because I asked the question.
I'm totally on Ryan's side. And I think, Ryan, that I think you should be running to an attorney right now and get something notarized that William gave you like a really good compliment. Yeah.
Look, I could have said, are you selling to crabs? That's an amazing question.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody else would say that was amazing. But not the two of us. So, but to answer your question, so our ideal customer is an enterprise level employer. It could be corporate, could be nonprofit, could be government, could be in the US, it could be in the Netherlands. they tend to have at least 1,000 employees. That's not a magic number. If there could be an employer with 600, that is much better for us than an employer with 15,000. The reason for the 1,000 is just sort of like a rule of thumb. If you have at least 1,000 employees, you tend to be hiring a lot of early career, which is very often overlaps with hourly. And William, that's kind of to your point a little bit earlier. It's not the same, but it's often very similar. And you are tending to hire at scale or high volume, many people would call it. The reason why that's important to us is we realized 4 or 5 years ago that because of the way we're built, largely pay-per-click, pay-per-application, programmatic, that we're really well set up for that intersection of early careers, performance-based pricing, pay-per-click, pay-per-application, and programmatic. If you're an SMB and you're hiring one person here or one person there, our model is kind of like hunting for a fly with a bazooka. Right. We literally will turn those employers away. We removed, I think it's 2 years ago now, we removed from our site the ability to buy a single posting. Right. So you cannot come to our job board and buy a job posting ad. You have to go through our customer service or sales team. We vet you to make sure that you are hiring dozens, hundreds, or thousands, and for an extended period of time, at least a few months. If you need to hire 20 people today, but then not again 2 years from now, you're not a good fit.
Right. What are you seeing from the candidate's perspective? What behaviors or things that they want or like, you know, like anything that you see from that cohort of people that would be interesting?
I don't think this is going to be news to anybody who's been in the industry for any period of time, but candidates really despise almost every single piece of HR tech that has ever been invented.
100%.
100%. Followed closely by almost every single recruiter. The recruiters who don't despise every piece of HR tech are usually the ones who were involved in the purchasing decisions to buy that particular tool.
They can't hate themselves.
Yeah. I mean, we can hate ourselves, and maybe if we take that like second dessert, we deserve to hate ourselves, but that's a different story for a different day. Candidates feel dehumanized because they are. We do dehumanize them. They feel that our decisions are arbitrary because they largely are.
Right.
They feel that they're not being heard, listened to, being offered the opportunity to succeed, because as an industry, we've become pretty good at that. So our answer as an industry, when I talk industry, it's the HR tech, TA tech employers.
Right.
Our answers to all of that is to layer on more technology that is designed to further distance ourselves from candidates.
We heard you. We listened to you. And then we built more tech.
Yeah, you guys saw the movie Animal House with Kevin Bacon in the prone position. Thank you, sir. May I have another? It's a lot.
Thank you,
like,
sir. May I have another?
It's a lot like that. And I'm kind of hopeful, but I've been around long enough to be a little bit of a skeptic. I'm hopeful that with this next wave of technology, basically machine learning, artificial intelligence, that maybe, just maybe, there'll be some employers out there who will say, this is fantastic because it's going to free up our recruiters to recruit. And we're going to use this to enable them to have actual real dialogue with the candidates who seem at a surface to be a good fit. And we're going to use skill-based hiring methods and actually look at, is this person likely to be more productive, not based upon some name on a diploma or, you know, where they, what zip code they live in, or just really arbitrary ways that at the end of the day, they're kind of designed to eliminate candidates from the hiring pool rather than include them. I really, really hope that we're going to see some shining examples with even a few employers succeeding, because then I think it'll give courage to the rest to follow suit. But I'm not all that hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the same thing. When you said fit, it made me think of fit for the company, which is the employer, yeah. which is great for them to understand, okay, does that rectangle fit this square job, etc. But what do we do for candidates in terms of fit? Like, what type of wayfinding do we have for them, what can we do for them to find out what fits them and what jobs they should apply for?
Yeah,
because I think there's such a struggle there, even back to when we were in college. It's like, well, people said that you should look at this. Okay, go look at that. Like,
yeah,
so random as yeah, to, you know, what fits and what doesn't fit.
I can remember when I was a kid, I worked in my dad's office part-time in a couple of summers. And what struck me then, my dad was going through a career transition. He was the Canadian equivalent of a CPA, an accountant.
Right.
And he was really clear with me. I was probably 14, 15, 16 years old. He was really good at that and really hated it.
Yep.
And I think that generation, he was that what we would now call the silent generation, just before boomers. He was born in the 30s. That generation, if he was taught that if you were good at something, that's what you did for a living.
Great.
The way whether you guessed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, does it pay your bills? Are you good at it? It's like, what more can you ask for?
No, that's what you do.
And coming out of the depression, I think that that made sense. You know, then you flash forward to like people like me, Gen Xers, and then it's like all of a sudden work-life balance, which basically meant that you should still do what you are good at and that you can get paid for, but you should be aware of what you're missing out on.
Yeah.
Not that you're going to get that, but you should be aware of that.
You should be aware.
Yeah, I think millennials were really the first generation that actually had some real balance, and Gen Z is like all in, thankfully. Only took us 100 years to get 100%. To the point where humans got to be human.
I'm not sure where I fall on this.
You're Gen X.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm Gen X. I'm the same as you.
Oh, that's being the same.
I just feel like I aged.
Yeah, for those who are like listening to the audio only,
you want to be a millennial? Really?
The dismay on Ryan's face when he realized he was the same as William. That was just staggering.
I'm not going to be that. Yeah.
I mean, I know we do share the same, fun fact, we do share the same birthday, day and date, just 10 years difference.
Most people think Ryan's older than us.
And so,
this episode is going to be heavily edited by Ryan, but
what about candidates today?
Sorry to answer your question, one thing that I think is really great is that there's been a real massive increase in the number of tools available for what a lot of people would call career mapping. Mm. I'm interested in these things. How do I get there? What's the first, second, third job that I need? What can I do with this major? When I went to college, you could go into your career service office and maybe 5% did.
Yeah.
And you could talk to a career counselor and they would say, oh, and in my case, I was a finance major. It's like, okay, so you should go work in accounting or work for a bank. It's like, thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, exactly.
There wasn't any thought by the vast majority of people about what else could you do with a finance degree? What is it that you actually like to do? What can you line up? And there are a bunch of sites out there now that do that. One of my favorites is Zipia, which when you go to it, on the surface, it kind of looks like a job board, but it's really about where are you today and where do you want to be 5 years from now? Most job boards talking as somebody who's a co-host of a job board podcast, unfortunately, one thing that our industry does and a lot of employers do is that they pay much more attention to where you were 5 years ago and where you are today than where you want to be 5 years from now.
Right.
And that's resumes by nature are backward looking documents. They tell an employer where you've been, but they're horrible at telling an employer where you want to go. And I think fundamentally that's the biggest problem in the world of work is that employers are hiring for the future, but evaluating candidates based on the past. And I don't know how AI or anything else changes that. I just think it makes it cheaper and faster to make the same mistakes all over again.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't.
Kind of like where you're going with that. Yeah,
I don't disagree.
Yeah. So, okay. So you've been at this for 30 mm-hmm. years, right? More than 30 years, right? So the problem that you were trying to solve 30 years ago when you kicked this off as the facts guy and all that to the problem you're trying to solve just today, has it changed? Where has it changed?
Wow. Okay. So that's really interesting. I would say that at a high level, it hasn't changed at all.
Right.
You've still got candidates essentially looking at classified ads, whether they're in print or whether they're online.
Right.
They're self-selecting. Am I interested in this job? Could I even find that other job? And they're trying to read the tea leaves as to what the employer might want. And their answer to that pretty quickly is, well, pardon my French, fuck it, I give up. I'm just going to apply to everything. Let the employer figure it out.
Right.
The employer says, I can't believe that candidates are applying to all of these jobs. Don't they know what I want? Can't they read my mind even though they don't even know that I exist? And I'm going to have to wade through all these applications. And I used to get 20 applications and now I get 200. So now I need automation, which is only going to make it more difficult for the candidate to figure out what I want. And so now rather than 200, in a few years, it might be 2,000.
When you put generative AI, you can do 10,000 resumes that are personalized to those job ads. So that noise level that you're talking about, that just goes through the roof. And volume, by and large, is a curse word to both candidates and employers.
Yeah.
A candidate shouldn't be applying to 100 jobs.
Right.
And employers, they shouldn't want 10,000 applicants for a job.
Yeah.
And we both fall in love with volume, and volume is the Antichrist.
And it doesn't have to be this way. Nope. There are countries like Germany, for example, that have really robust apprenticeship programs.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of those.
Yep.
And whether or not higher education is right for you, or in some cases, secondary education, you know, what we in the US would call high school,
yep.
You can drop out in the equivalent of 10th grade in Germany, go through an apprenticeship and learn a trade, it doesn't even have to be like, you know, heating and cooling or being a mechanic. Right. There are apprenticeships in knowledge-based careers, sales, IT, whatever. And the employer takes you on for a couple of years, not expecting you to really do much, but they're going to teach you. At the end of the couple of years, they've got you for life.
Yeah.
If, you know, because they've demonstrated tremendous loyalty to you. And you as the employee have seen that. It's going to take a lot to pry you away from that employer. In the US and to a little bit of a lesser extent, but not much, but Canada, the UK, we do a really good job of demonstrating disloyalty to the employee before they even start. And then we're shocked, absolutely shocked, when that employee who has to get food stamps in order to feed their kids leaves for 50 cents more an hour. It's like, guess what? That 50 right. cents more an hour might be the difference between giving my kid milk this week and not. Of course they're going to leave for 50 cents more an hour. It's discouraging because I see this just sort of continual creeping in the industry. Now, to be sure, there are many employers who are a heck of a lot better than that. And I do think there's been a substantial improvement over the last 4 or 5 years in wages and benefits and, you know, and even just people actually getting PTO.
Wasn't that forced on them though, Stephen?
It was.
I was about to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the 15 now movement. You don't hear that anymore, right? $15 when people really started to advocate for that, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago with inflation, that's actually $20 now.
Right.
And it was forced on them. Some employers embraced it and said, yeah, we do need to start paying fair wages. Those are the employers that you don't tend to hear from as much.
Right.
The employers that you tend to hear from more are the employers who resisted treating their employees well. They're the ones who make the headlines about we can't find anybody. People no longer work. It's like, you know what? I don't want to work for $9 an hour either if I can work for $22.
Yeah.
Why would you? Actually, it's kind of an IQ test.
It's theft.
So I've described the hourly market today as we've treated candidates forever as a spigot. And we just, when we want them, we turn the spigot on. And then we don't want them, we turn the spigot off. And now candidates are viewing companies with a spigot. And when they want to a job, they turn the thing on. And when they want it off, they just turn it off. So it's the commoditization of both.
Yeah.
We've commoditized candidates forever.
Yeah.
Still do in some cases. The difference is Gen Z and probably some millennials, they've commoditized companies.
Yeah. Yeah, when those of my generation, Gen X and up, boomers, when we look at Gen Z and, you know, all these people who want to be TikTok influencers, and we scratch our heads, is that a real thing? Is that a real job? I think we forget that one of the reasons that they want to do that is because they want to work for themselves.
All right.
This is an entrepreneurial effort, initiative, interest. I think we should be applauding that. I don't think that we should be looking at that like that's fake work. Right. It's actually way harder. Right. Somebody said to me years and years ago when I was getting started in this business, the definition of an entrepreneur is somebody who doesn't want to work for 40 hours a week for somebody else, that they would instead prefer to work 80 hours a week for themselves.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. When this spigot is a really interesting analogy. And I think a lot of employers can quickly succeed and really win what some, I don't really like the expression, but the war for talent.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that implies we're committing war on talent. And it's not.
It's the genocide for talent.
Yeah, but... What? You know, there are some really easy things that employers of early talent can do. And that is, you know, directly, candidly, on your website, during onboarding, during the performance reviews, which should be weekly, not annually.
Right.
Communicate, these are the options open to you. Not, if you take this job, then we are going to move you into this next role, because it should be collaborative. It should be the candidate and the employer jointly making that decision. But if you take this role, then typically these are the three paths or eight paths or two paths,
right,
or whatever that are your next logical step. And it's going to take you 6 months. It's going to take you 2 years, whatever. Just that puts you above probably 99% of the employers. And if 100%. You're a large employer, 1,000 employees up, you've got to know that. You've got to know what that path is. You're not blocking somebody from taking an unusual path, but you're laying it out and saying, we've been thoughtful. We care about you. We want you to succeed here over the long term. And we understand that your first job as a customer service rep is probably not going to be your last.
So Ryan, you got Enterprise out of college, right? You went to Enterprise out of college.
Did they
give you? First of all, they've done great college recruiting, as far as I've known, forever, right?
Yeah.
So did they let you know? Did they give you an idea of what your progression would be?
I knew, well, in that case, yeah, I knew exactly what it was. I knew you come in as a management trainee, then you're going into an assistant. Well, then you take your management assistant test, and then it might be different now for those listening. But back then, that's what it was. Then you took your test. Once you've went through your interviews and your test, then you kind of sat in a pool of people until a spot was open, because it was super competitive. Then you had to go interview for the position. You got into the position. Same idea for the manager and then area manager, et cetera.
I like that. Yeah. That's cool.
But Enterprise was, as a college kid coming out of college, that wasn't my first job. My first job was with a company called Ryan Holmes, who, for whatever reason, said, meet us at the career fair. That's where the woman was that was going to onboard me. She never showed up. So she never showed up. The table right next to it was Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I didn't know what to do. I was young. And started talking to a woman named Tina. And that was it. I started working with Enterprise that next week.
Wow.
That's how his career started. There was a table and then another table. Does it sound like how candidates make decisions? I mean, nothing.
Yeah, I probably would have still been there had I have not hit the three accident.
And the weird thing is that the woman who was supposed to interview you was on time for every single other interview that she had. She saw you coming and she ran away.
Oh, no. I already had the job. Like I already had the job. She decided at that point. She's just like, no way.
She needed a soda more than she needed Ryan.
She went out the night before. That's basically what happened. She had a headache. She had to get some caffeine.
She's like, this guy got it.
I'll talk to him next week. And he went to Enterprise.
He's good. Yeah. So I put suits on and washed cars for the next couple of years. And I loved everything.
I'm so glad you mentioned the washing cars, because I've heard from a number of mostly young adults who are considering, you know, investigating, applying, interviewing, accepting an offer from Enterprise, which is now like Enterprise Mobility, I think is the name of the organization. I think because they also do like hourly rentals and scooters and stuff like that.
Right.
But a lot of them will say something like, I didn't go to college to wash cars.
And it's more than
way
that.
More than
I
that.
Said the same but thing. I said the
yeah,
same.
But and you're right. But I think one of the things that Enterprise does, given even a tiny chance by the candidate, if the candidate's listening at all, it's like, no, we're not hiring you to wash cars, but you are going to wash cars in the beginning. And it's not a hazing ritual. No. You're here to learn the business. We are going to teach you how to our business, about management, about how to interact with customers, how to deal with problem employees. And they have an incredibly great reputation for that.
Kudos to Enterprise, because they also hire a lot of college athletes, like not the ones that you see.
Well, that's the recruiting schedule, at least back then. That was the recruiting schedule, was athletes, because you've got discipline, strong work ethic. You're up early in the morning, you're doing your thing.
I don't hate that.
I could just remember.
Yeah.
No. And I could remember, I know this is so bad, I wanted the cleanest car on the lot. Like when I would clean the car, I'm like, I'm gonna get this car out of there.
Yeah.
and I did, and I just kept going. I unfortunately just got into an accident.
Ryan, please. Okay, you've been in there an hour and a half. Come on.
step away from the car.
I can see a perfectionist. Yeah. I can see it. Mine would be the others. Mine would be like, I don't see you, trash. We're good.
William's car would be like, I got most of the deer off of the head, off of the hood.
I don't think Enterprise recruiting would pay the bills, but if I were to go back into recruiting, I could recruit the hell out of people for Enterprise, because I fell into it. And then I went from there. I went into Connexin. I drank that Kool-Aid too. And that got me nowhere.
Got you all kinds of stuff. Where do you see college recruiting in the next couple of years?
Yeah. You know, one of the nice things about this space is that college and university recruiting used to be kind of its own department
within
an organization. And if you didn't fit, I think you said earlier, William, like kind of like triangle into a square hole or something like that. So if you didn't go to one of the...
That could go sideways so fast.
Oh, you know, we'll leave that for Chad and Chase. If you didn't go to one of the colleges, universities that employer was going on campus to recruit from, then you might as well not have existed.
No, you didn't exist.
Something that changed before COVID, it was probably, you know, for most organizations, 2015, 16, 17, 18 kind of timing, was that they started to be a little bit more school agnostic. Yes, we're going to go on campus to these 20 schools, But if you go to a different school and you're in the right major, your credentials are good, there's some tie to our area, our geographic area, please apply. We will consider you. Sometimes that was true. Sometimes it wasn't. The one of the things that really changed during COVID is that employers became far more school agnostic.
Right.
They didn't really care that much. What they were looking for was more. Yeah, it was more like what Ryan was describing with Enterprise Rent-A-Car, what they've done for decades, which is we're going to look at this, and I'm going to say kid, because a lot of them are 20, 20, 21.
They are.
We're going to look at them, and it's like, you know, okay, the fact that they got into a college or university is fantastic. The fact that they're looking like they're going to graduate is even better. But what we really care about is where are they going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And the school and the major and their GPA were secondarily important. That's been embraced by a lot more employers now. They're really doing a better job of not caring as much, in some cases not at all, which school. It's also really opened the doors to students coming out of boot camps, to people who didn't go to any kind of post-secondary education at all, to ex-military, to career changers. The doors are a lot more open, and I think that's going to continue. If anybody who just looks at some demographic charts to see that it's been now, I think the largest graduating class in history was something like 13, 14 years ago. And it continues to get smaller and smaller every year. And for the last coming up on a decade now, immigration has been falling off. You know, there's a real shortage of Gen Z and the generation after them, alphas, to replace the boomers who are now largely out of the job market. Wow. And then, you know, our generation, the Xers, which were kind of forgotten, and even millennials. I mean, heck, millennials are now like in their mid 30s. These are not early career people anymore.
So last question for me, and it's just one around bias, maybe one that I have, maybe something that you see you see any bias between online degrees and offline degrees?
Yeah. Yes, there is. It's not as bad as it used to be. Again, it used to be, if you didn't go to one of our 20 core schools, then we don't want to talk to you.
Right.
So an online degree in the eyes of most employers is not as good as a degree from a traditional, well-regarded, accredited school. But employers don't care about degrees as much anymore. So if you have an online degree, that still puts you a step up from those who don't have one. We hired somebody about 2 years ago who I believe she had a degree from a community college. Mm-hmm. If not, it was like a second or third tier university.
Right.
And that didn't matter that much to us. What mattered to us was that she had successfully completed a certification through Google for SEO and SEM. And that's what we were hiring for. So the fact that she had a communications degree or marketing degree, it was like, well, that's nice, but it doesn't really prove that she knows that material.
Right.
The certification from Google was like, that was our assessment, right? Right then it put her head and shoulders above everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that from countless employers, that candidates are being put through online assessments or the equivalent of that, like a certification that the candidate may have chosen to do voluntarily or on their own, way more than in the past. I have some serious questions about a lot of the assessment programs. I think a lot of them are about as accurate as like measuring your head and telling me if you are like smart or creative. A lot of them, it's like it sounds nice, but it's a lot of voodoo and witchcraft.
It's because people want certainty. So they want to be able to have something that will predict and say, okay, what color are you? And if you're a blue, then you're going to be empathetic. And we want to hire empathetic people.
Yeah.
We want,
right. What's your love language?
They want something to make the child to make sense of what you took that note. I don't even know what to do with that. But they want
they want to make
sense of the world. So assessments, even though there's a lot of snake oil in assessments, that snake oil makes them feel like, okay, well, this is what makes sense of the world.
Right? Yeah. If we had lifelong employment like we did until a few decades ago, where so the presumption was you would be with an employer for decades.
Yeah.
If we had that, we wouldn't have to be assessing candidates as much. You'd know. You'd know William's been with us for 14 years. We know what he's good at. We know what he's bad at. We know what he used to be good at and used to be bad at and where he's heading. And let's work to find the right fit for him for the next 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And now it's like, if you can't show us your value in 3 to 5 days, get the hell out of here.
Well, that's that way for candidates too. That's why you got a lot of ghosting after the fact. Someone takes a job, gets into it, does a couple shifts, it goes out of here.
Fire faster. We are at time, Stephen. Thank you so much for coming out today. We appreciate it. For those of you that are still listening, like us, love us, subscribe everywhere that you can. If you see us out there live somewhere, come say hi, give it a little heart. There you go. We're watching a Taylor Swift Eras Tour at the house right now. So it's like a multi-day thing. So
you
that's,
can't just do that in one day.
We're into that. You can. It's like 3.5 hours. So we'll go multiple times and
Shout out to Brilliant and Brews podcast. They sent me a t-shirt. So.
They didn't send me one, so they don't get any airtime. See, when they send me a shirt. Hate.
By the way, Steven, send him a shirt. He just wants a shirt. That's all. All of a God.
I've got one with a few holes and a couple stains on it. It's in the mail.
I'll take it. I will take
Steven,
it.
Steven, thank you so much.
I will take it.
Cheers, guys.